Hey guys, Tom Takar here. Just wanted to say thank you for listening to the podcast. And if you're enjoying it, throw us a little rating and review on iTunes. That helps us out a ton. And if you have any questions or comments for me or Tommy, send us an email at standbyyourbandpod@gmail.com or tweet at us at standbyyourbandpod on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. The year is 1982. A pound of tomatoes costs only 39 cents, which is why audiences would throw them at Tommy McNamara's comedian ancestors. Time Magazine's Man of the Year is the computer, a machine used to burn CDs. The smiley face emoticon is invented by Scott Falman, a.k.a. the prequel to the Emoji Movie. And in Central Park, John Linnell and John Flansburg, two boys from Lincoln, Massachusetts, played their first concert under the name El Grupo do Rock and Roll, a name that wouldn't last long. The boys John started playing all around New York, and with Linnell on accordion and sax, Flansburg on guitar, a drum machine, whimsical lyrics, and absurd props, they picked up a following fast. From 1984 to 87, they were the house band at a club called Dorinka, where they would eventually sell out every show. After Flansburg's apartment was robbed and Linnell got into a bike accident, the two stopped performing for a while, and they began recording their songs onto an answering machine called Dial-A-Song, where people could call and hear their music. It was so popular that it became hard to reach them. Their first album came out in 1986, and it was a college radio success, with the video for Don't Let Start getting a lot of play on MTV. In 88, they released Lincoln, and Anna Ang hit number 11 on U.S. modern rock charts. The next year, the boys signed with Elektra Records and released their third album, Flood. Flood would go platinum, and Birdhouse in Your Soul would reach number 3 on U.S. modern rock charts. With 3 gold albums, 2 Grammys, and one of the greatest television theme songs of all time, Boss of Me from Malcolm in the Middle, today we stand by They Might Be Giants.
I'm the only non-Chicago guy here.
Oh.
I got a... I'll blend in, though. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. Say something about Italian beef. Real quick.
Is it good?
Oh, shit. Are we in downtown Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah, the voices you guys are hearing, we should introduce our guests.
Yeah.
First of all, let me introduce my co-host here.
Doing?
He might be Tommy McNamara.
Oh, good to see you. That was clever.
Thank you.
That was good.
You might be a giant if...
Wow. Never heard that one.
Is that really?
Honest and true.
I never thought of it before.
That's like a bit that probably should... Somebody should do that.
If the water gets you instead, you might be a giant.
If the statue got you high,
you might be a giant.
You might be a giant. The voices you are hearing are to my left, Joe Rumrill.
Hello.
And directly across from me, Andrew Tischer.
Hey.
All right.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
No problem. Thank you for having us. This has been delightful so far.
I'm having a great time.
Hopefully it's only uphill.
We both were talking about how, pretty much every time we do this podcast, we're hungover. But this is already delightful.
I'm less
hungover than I am tired. I drove from Philly I got home at 4:30 in the morning last night. I did that good comedy theater.
Oh, what an aptly named theater.
It's good. Yeah. It's good.
So aptly named.
Yeah, it's a nice little theater.
Kate and Aaron, who run it, are so sane and funny and competent.
It's very rare. Yeah.
So
competent
amazing.
Is a word that you rarely hear used for comedy club owners.
Right. Yeah. They could be running a real business and making actual money.
Instead of having annoyance people come in and do whatever.
Right.
It is funny, the posters you see there where it's a big, and they make it seem like such a big deal. It's Daniel Simonson is finally making it.
Yeah.
I love Daniel.
Right,
it's just
right,
funny.
Right. He's the best.
He's wonderful.
He's Schroeder.
But you had a good time there?
It was a fun time.
That's
great. It was one of those where I got there at 11:15 and left at 1:30. So I was like, this is a real stupid trip that I made. But it was nice, but I came in exhausted. I had one of those drives home where I was so tired, and I was, you know how you tempt yourself on road trips with I'm going to eat like shit.
Oh, I don't tempt myself.
You just do it, right?
Just do it. Just
but that's the thing. Is Cinnabon. I had that. Ooh. I don't think that any Cinnabons were open.
Oh, really? Not on
it was
the,
like 3 in the morning.
I feel like on the Jersey Turnpike, there's all that, like, that's the true. Walt Whitman Memorial Rest Stop, the Clara Barton, you know, they've all got...
Walt Whitman used to write about the Cinnabon. That's right. What a lot of his poetry was about. Yeah, mine was Taco Bell last night. I was like, I'm going to do it. And then I couldn't find one that was open. And then I found a 7-Eleven, stopped in. I kind of like 7-Eleven as like a garbage food option where you're like, because they have all that, like the roller shit.
Did you get a taquito?
Yeah.
They had like, okay, I walked in and there was the saddest looking man hovering over the taquitos, and he wanted them to make him a pizza, and they wouldn't do it. Oh, they were like, I'm sorry.
How do you order off menu at 7-Eleven?
They have little pizzas sometimes that are like free slice, but they didn't have any because it was 3 in the fucking morning on the road. Like, it was not like in the city or anything.
That's so. He sounded so sad at the beginning, and now that he couldn't get his pizza, that's just so heartbreaking. Then,
yeah, no, I'm actually on his side. Honestly, you just put it in they're putting in the microwave for 10 minutes.
Just like, put it on one of those rollers.
They were going to do it. The guy was going to do it. And then who appeared to be his manager goes, the oven is off. So he looked so bummed out. But there was only 3 taquitos left. I was eyeballing them. That's what I was going to do. Uh-oh. He fucking ate them all.
He got all 3.
Wow. Actually, there was 4. I'm sorry. He took 3. I got 1. I walk out with 1 taquito. That's not a satisfying...
No.
Bullshit.
Now you're.
And I have to pat it with the gummy sharks. And
that's
the,
what
and
I did. I got neon gummy worms.
Yum.
That's my road. That's my road snack. And then you feel like shit immediately. Like as soon as I finished it, I was like, I gotta drive.
In practice,
hour.
I bet that is good. Like that's a good combo. But hearing it, like trying to place those two tastes on my tongue right
now.
Yeah,
they don't go together great.
That's wild.
Yeah, it is like they should have like a wine pairing sort of thing with shitty fruit snacks and and their
Now is this a red Skittle? I don't know. That's all.
So you can tell the provenance. This was manufactured right outside of Chicago. You know, you can tell, you can see if you smell this. Oh, this is from the Ohio plant.
What do you guys? So you go Cinnabon.
No, well, you know what? Cinnabon. I love Popeyes. I'll have Popeyes.
I was looking for Popeyes too. They have some of those, but I don't think they were open that late.
Right.
In those little.
And then there's some. Is it Roy stops. Rogers? Is that where I'm eating burgers from? Where I never eat those burgers.
Yeah.
Else? Yeah.
Yeah. They only have those in those travel plazas. I've only seen them there.
I think that the first time I ever had it was like on a family trip to Washington, D.C., and all of us were. I think my father was excited because he knew who Roy Rogers was. So we're like, oh, well, this will be good. That was part of Roy Rogers, so this will be good.
That's how my dad knew the Burger King personally, so he got so stoked whenever he would pass.
He finally made it. Yeah. Yeah. He had this dream of a restaurant his whole life.
Life's hard for the king. I've never been to a Roy Rogers.
Oh, Joe, you have to.
You simply must.
It sounds fun.
The cheese
fun.
Is so congealed on the burger. That's they don't congealed. Make it for you. You know, you just pick it off the rack.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
So you have to have one. you get some of these curly fries. It's like sawdust. It's
why is that allowed?
Yeah. And then warm plastic bottle of Coke.
They can't even get that right.
They can't
get the bottle
no.
of Coke.
Warm plastic bottle could be a They Might Be Giants track name.
Yeah. now we start.
Oh, shit. The roast begins.
Hey, don't let's start.
Oh, shit.
No, I actually I did enjoy the playlist. I'm going to start that. We're going to start positive.
Yeah, let's start with that. Right. Let's start with that because
so podcast over.
Sounds good. You guys against
we don't
each other.
Need to.
I like Tischer's songs better than Joe's.
Ooh, see, I was torn. I think I went back and forth on both, but we'll have to wait until we get to the playlist. That's at the end of the pod.
That's at the end.
Yeah, yeah. So
we talk about songs that the listener has no idea.
We don't normally do that. Tommy really ruined the fucking podcast.
Now, this I can believe.
This much I know to be true. No, we talk about the criticism of them and like what you and like your experiences with them before now and like what got you into them.
Yeah, so
stuff
first,
like that.
Where did you guys? When did you first hear them? Do you remember?
Sure. Yeah, I very much remember. I was. you know, and I feel like this might play into the idea of what this band, like, I feel like I have spent some time defending this, my love of this band. Mm-hmm. I was in fifth grade, and I was, well, actually, so probably the very first place I heard them, which I think is not uncommon for people, is they, way back in like 1990, two of their songs were used in a Tiny Toons episode, and I think a lot of people came to them that way.
Oh, and so that I did was not the, realize
and
that.
I didn't, you know, I just, in my mind, those were just like Tiny Toons songs, you know, and so I didn't really
seek out.
And I was like, I think I also came to the idea of being into music later than most people. I don't think I really started. I know I didn't start buying records for myself until like high school.
Oh wow!
And my parents didn't. My dad would listen to like Van Morrison and Grateful Dead and like Procol Harum, or how is that pronounced?
Oh. You got it.
Yeah. And so, which all seems so intimidatingly adult and sophisticated. Mm. To like, he wasn't into any like contemporary music. So mm-hmm. so just the idea of like buying a record was totally alien to me.
Wow.
Or like even really kind of like being into music outside of like stuff that was in television shows or movies or something was just like not done. But so then in fifth grade or between fourth and fifth grade, I was in this like day camp, and there was some teenager who was the counselor. I remember his name was Byron.
Oh, wow.
And, and so the year would have been like 1992, and Apollo 18 had just come out. And he was really into it. And his task at the summer camp was, my age group of kids was all supposed to put on this play. And his inspiration was, we'll make it a musical, and all these songs will be the soundtrack to this musical. And so someone got attacked by a spider.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at Joe, and he will recognize what these are.
I gotcha.
You know,
he's our hero.
Someone, we go into a haunted house. Someone's attacked by a blue thing.
Mm-hmm.
and so on. And so that was, and hearing those, and then like he would put them on, and all the kids would like dance to them. And so that was like my first introduction to even kind of bands. I think I like knew that the Beach Boys were a band, mm-hmm. and I knew that Alvin and the Chipmunks were a band. And I think that's like what I knew. And so hearing these songs, it sounded, they sounded really cool to me. One of them had a swear in it. You know, and a lot of that record especially, but I feel like their first kind of four records or even maybe like first five records have this really kind of like dark quality that as a kid seemed really like actually kind of very genuinely scary to me.
Wow.
There's like a song about being in a hall of heads, you know, and so, you know, as you get older, I guess you kind of recognize how cartoony and like really not at all scary that mm-hmm. is. But at the time they seemed really, really cool to me. And so then my dad's friend had that record, and I recognized it one time. He like brought a bunch of records over and was like, you know, look through my stuff. 'Cause my dad wasn't into a lot of music. Yeah. And I like recognized that one. I was like, Oh, we have to borrow this. And then that became like a road trip staple in my family.
Oh, wow.
And then we also got like Flood. And then when I finally in middle school and high school was like, oh, I guess I have to start being into bands, that was a starting point for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have really, I want to say, like, I feel like there's lots of childhood things I've discarded. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's just a nostalgia thing. Like, I've really held on to them, and they've really been my favorite band for a very long time. But then, and then I think also, they were a real gateway for me into a lot of other music because they like kind of hop genres a bit. Mm. And they also work with a lot of, like, they enjoy bringing people in to be instrumentalists or vocalists or
like
whatever.
Who are examples of that?
Like, so there's a country musician named Laura Cantrell who lives in New York.
Oh, nice.
And she like sings on one of the tracks. Mm-hmm. And then like they have all these like weirdo, I mean, 'cause I was so obsessively into it too. Like, and they were just two guys.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, they didn't even have a backing band. So they would especially bring people in. So there'd be all these people that I'd read, you know, I'd obsessively read these liner notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And be like, who is Eugene Chadbourne? And it's like, oh, he's a noise rock guitarist from Massachusetts or wherever. And it's like, what is this? And then like, that would expose me to the idea of noise rock, you know? And so I think, you know, or like they have a song about the Replacements, and it's like, who are the Replacements, you know? So I think in that way, it was also like a real gateway of like a real safety jumping off point of like, okay, I'll dip, like, oh, I guess I like country music because I like this Laura Cantrell lady, you know. So so they're really helpful to me in that way. So that's that, but anyways, that's how I kind of got into them.
I love that they did like a rock opera because I used to like based on their songs because when I was younger, I like my dream was to write a Smashing Pumpkins rock opera,
sure.
like a Mamma Mia for melancholy. I was just this angsty idiot kid. Like, I remember being in like a hotel with my family and like everyone was hanging out and I was like sitting there writing on the hotel stationery, like and then 1979 and it's like.
So this exists somewhere?
No, I think I had an outline for it.
Okay.
That's so funny.
How
old were you at this point?
I think maybe like 13.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I did something similar with an Incubus album where it like, it was basically like a film that was written around the album, like Morning View. And it was all about like this kid killing himself, but everybody's cool with it. Like, they're like, this is what he would have wanted. It was really fucked up.
God. So I just want to preemptively establish where our hosts are in no position to throw the too dorky.
Oh
yeah,
I was just criticism. Say, yeah.
Good
giants.
God, how are we? How are we sitting here? The cooler.
I think we can all relate on here. There comes a time in every boy's life when he searches. Who is Eugene Chad Bourne?
I had to do a report on him in music school because he's the one he does those like 100 electric guitar pieces. Yeah. I remember doing a
he's
report.
The,
on
he's
him.
The, he's that weird intro to Absolutely Bill's Mood.
Oh, gotcha. Over the phone,
and it really is over the phone.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah, we're the bigger nerds. That's true.
What is weird with the conversation around them? I feel like it always makes it like either you're a nerd and you like them or you're a bully and you don't. It's just
yeah,
it's
like, but
it's what it feels like sometimes, I'd say.
I feel like from an outsider perspective, because I didn't know them that well. I knew Istanbul. I feel like that's the song. And I hate that song, but
which they didn't write.
It's
a cover. Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Cover.
Yeah. I did not know that.
This is the first blockbuster revelation of this podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like, I think that the connection to this is that they get compared to Bare Naked Ladies a lot because they have a lot of cute sort of music.
Certainly.
It sounds kind of thing. I really liked this, but that's, I feel like it is kind of like playful, like silly.
And at this point, I think they make the bulk of their money doing children's music.
Yeah.
Like they hit a point where they started making music specifically for
children.
And like
all their children's albums have gone gold and stuff like that. Like people love their children's music.
Gotcha.
I feel like when people say they're like, oh, it's for nerds or whatever, I think of it like Big Bang Theory, where it's like, not really. Like, they're still they still are cool. I don't know.
Well,
stupid?
Yeah, I have thoughts on this, but I want to hear Joe's origin story.
Was actually happy that it got sort of glossed over, just because I thought like Tischer seemed very, very thorough, and mine was just, you know, as a kid, just like into novelty music and like Weird Al and stuff like that. Hearing Istanbul on the radio, hearing like, oh, that's a real band, but that's music that it's still sort of goofy and I can like sort of, and the first non-Weird Al album I ever got was, I found out that Istanbul was on an album called Flood, and went out, got Flood, loved it so much, and then was just a fan from that. It was what got me out of comedy music, but
silly though.
Part of the Venn diagram, sort of. But like just said, it was a jumping off point. You like They Might Be Giants, then you learn about Devo, Talking Heads, and then you get into punk, and then you get into, you know, you find out that the classic rock that your dad was listening to is good. And I just feel like it was a good gateway to get me into real music.
Yeah.
With quotations around those, you know.
Just it is
not Weird Al anymore.
Yeah.
They definitely seem like a direct descendant of Devo, I feel like.
I think so too. I don't know. I know that these articles Mother's Boss worked with Linnell a little bit. I'm sure they're aware of each other.
I'm sure. So. Well, they covered a Devo song.
Oh yeah, Through Being Cool.
Right.
I forgot about that.
And I'm sure they, I mean, I think also when they started out, there was I think they quickly realized they were on dangerous ground, but I think when they started out, there was a much bigger performance art aspect, because they were, when they started out in the 80s in New York, on the Lower East Side, they were playing not rock clubs, but like performance art venues.
Yeah.
And so they would have like props and weird outfits.
Giant hats.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that would add something to this music for me a little bit if I saw the outfits and stuff.
Well, I think if people knew more about their origin story and really learned that they were like a real band slumming it in New York for a really long time, like just like any like punk band would have.
Uh-huh.
It just so happens that their music is a little more melodic and goofy, and and sometimes they'll wear giant carpet hats too.
But I mean that, because that was another thing for me too, is then when I started to, because I listened to those couple albums for, you know, a few years of my childhood, and then when it was like starting to get into them and finding out that it was just two dudes, and that was so cool.
So cool.
And that they had actually started in Brooklyn in the 80s when Brooklyn was like not cool.
Nope.
And
it's funny to think of like people used to be so like, they demonized Brooklyn to this like terrifying place to be. Like,
right.
I, coming from Indiana, I feel like people would be like, "Oh, Brooklyn, that's, you can't live there. It's scary." And then
my grandma still is like,
"Yeah, I feel like my mom is like that." But then this goofy ass music was coming out.
Right,
absolutely.
But they tell stories. I think it was absolutely really scary when like, they were talking about moving into this like burned out apartment building.
Yeah,
there were crack vials on the street. Like the whole, you know. You know, but then, you know, they used to have this dial-a-song service where they, like, also in, like, you know, 84, they started this phone machine where you would call, and every day they would put a different tape in of a song they'd recorded. You know, and this is like
when
phone machines,
people,
not everyone had a phone, like it was like a phone machine was like a $200 investment.
Yeah.
You know? And like, that's a very cool string. And they would like run ads in the Village Voice that was just like free when you call from work, and then just the number, you know.
Yeah.
For me, it didn't even, again, like, I thought they were just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, pre Malcolm in the Middle and like everyone knowing who they are and the children's records and all that, they were like, they seemed, you know, it's also like hard to talk about that shift, like post internet. You know, it's like they were, no one knew. Like, I would say they were my favorite. Like, now I say they're my favorite band, and people are like, "Oh, really?" And but at the time, it was just like, "Who is that?"
Yeah,
and they really seemed like,
why
this
is
very
that name
cool
so long
underground thing. Yeah, right.
No, even when you just said they were your favorite band, even though you came on to defend them, that's not usually the case. People who come on, that's usually like, "I like this. It's not my favorite, but I think it's getting shit on unfairly." Favorite band, I was surprised to hear.
I think it's great because now people will listen to it and be like, "Oh, someone's actually representing the band."
Yeah, the Bare Naked Ladies one, famously, I ended up defending the band more than the guest. Famously was an interesting word.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I would, you know. I like Bare Naked Ladies.
I like them.
I don't know much about them. And I was, they were the one that you said that they get compared to TMBG?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know Bare Naked Ladies all that much.
I think it's mostly songs like If I Had $1 Million has a very Might Be Giants kind of vibe.
Musically, though.
Definitely. Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
I don't know that that's true. I mean, because I think I was very into, I mean, I don't want to, I have a less full-throated defense of Bare Naked Ladies than They Might Be Giants, but I was very into Bare Naked Ladies in high school.
Uh-huh.
And like, I do think they're, again, extremely melodic. I think that they also experiment musically on those first few records.
Yeah.
I think that they're interested in humor, but not in a way that's purely jokey all the time, but there's often that humorous. And I think like lyrically, like, you know, there's that interest in the like mundane that They Might Be Giants also have.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this will be a song about a table, you know.
Do they have a song about a table?
No.
Okay.
I was trying to think.
They will. Someday soon.
They're gonna have
and it's going to be beautiful.
I think
it's hard to... I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, no, no. I don't...
I think... Well, hearing people compare bands to They Might Be Giants also throws me for a loop a little bit, just because they actively switch up their genre song to song, I'd say.
Right.
So it's really hard to even say
something sounds like They Might Be Giants.
That's fair.
In my head.
That's definitely fair, because listening to this playlist, I was like, oh, this isn't what I thought this was going to sound like.
Yeah.
Like a couple songs were, but like a lot of it, I was like, oh, this is something like this is I completely really, different than what I expected.
Yeah.
I only knew the Malcolm in the Middle song like pretty much exclusively. And I just thought that's what they do. They write Malcolm in the Middle songs.
And, I think if I didn't know that was not that I dislike Malcolm in the Middle, I don't love it.
Oh shit!
The Another fact hot that it, take
I'm sorry, yeah.
Tommy, stand by know. Malcolm in the Middle.
You know who we got stand? Special Malcolm's friend.
Jesus,
he was in a wheelchair.
That's true, and he talked real slow. Speak on this, Joe.
We got special guest Jane Kaczmarek coming in.
He's going to twist your ear. Tell you to clean up this apartment now before Al gets home.
She was one of the scariest characters of all time, I feel like. They really built her into a terrifying character.
It was weird.
Dysfunctional families bummed me out.
Man.
Like, I hated Married with Children. I hated I didn't like.
What about
I
The Simpsons?
Like, The Simpsons were animated so that gets a pass.
Marge's love is so not in question.
Yeah,
that's true. Except for in the first 15 seasons, that's true. And then they, for whatever fucking reason,
that's not
they change it.
The Simpsons doesn't exist after season.
Yeah. But they do start like, oh, Marge is dating someone else now.
Wait,
and
what?
They do
get
all
out
that.
Of town.
Yeah, I swear to God, there's episodes where it's like Marge
Jane
is Kaczmarek, with somebody
is
else.
That true?
Busy right now cleaning the tubs.
Thank God somebody
now,
stepped up.
Now, if you boys
plate.
Bring another damn spider into this house, Reese, hide it.
I love the implied Reese. Wait, so Marge is dating someone else?
Yeah, it's like they go bananas, and it's a Simpsons fan.
Tell me
it's
she's
like
not
upsetting.
Dating Bart.
I actually saw this video on YouPorn where
goodness gracious.
Bart.
Yeah.
The debauchery you two bring into the world of podcasting is deplorable.
No wonder something
that's,
pure like a band who writes a song about a sad hat not be appreciated by you.
You guys
two nice boys coming in off the street to talk about a band they like. And what are we dealing with? Animated incest. Making fun of the handicapped.
Hey, you didn't make fun. You just called attention
Gracious
to it.
Me.
It's actually very polite to point out a handicap.
That's true. They like to be pointed out and acknowledged. Otherwise, people are glancing over them. Have you guys seen Tommy's new Twitter handle, Deplorable McNamara?
The nickname caught on.
Yeah.
We should talk about the criticism, because I found some articles.
Oh, we should, before we...
idiots.
Speaking,
no doubt.
Speaking of criticism, we should go ahead and play Jared's clip before I forget.
Nice.
So our dear friend, the owner of the Comedy Attic, Jared... Oh, thank you.
No problem.
Jared Thompson sends in his thoughts on the band.
This is a clip of him.
Wait,
this
what?
Is a great. Yeah,
this
what
is a,
production?
This is our
feature.
Dial a song.
Yeah, yeah.
If you call Jared at any time, it's his voicemail, just him shitting on bands.
Cue a clip.
So the one thing is we can't talk during this. Mm-hmm. So all right, let's see. Make sure it's up before I start.
I'm scared. I don't know why I'm scared.
I can tell you there will be a discussion. This will include. Talk on Jeff Singer. He warned me before, so prepare yourselves mentally for that for whatever
Who?
Reason.
Yeah.
What's up, y'all? It's this week. They went to Jared. The boys are going to have someone on defending They Might Be Giants. Not a fan. I don't really know a whole lot about them. I don't like them. Their music is like real silly and just kind of pointless. Their fans are annoying. They're usually like white. Just know-it-all nerdy type people that wear like hats for no reason, you know, like Mike Stanley or Jeff Singer, like just the sort of like dumb, like weird guy, like, oh, I'm trying to be cool type hat instead of wearing a sports hat like you're supposed to. So they also do the theme song for like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. So they have done some sort of like, you know, interesting stuff. I just played them for my son, Max, and I'm going to ask him if he liked it or not. Max, did you like They Might Be Giants?
No.
All right, there you have it.
That's so funny.
So funny.
That's.
I forgot. So Tommy, you couldn't.
One thing I can say definitively about that is my headphones do not work anymore.
Oh shit!
No, the only one of the buds works now, and it must be and not the one. That, yeah, I'm gonna see. There's some headphones on that couch. I'm gonna see if.
Okay, check those out.
But Jared, I'll listen to it later.
That was a Jared classic.
That was so great.
What you missed, Tommy, is that he had his son Max. Wonderful boy, fan of the podcast. He is great. He's a wonderful boy. Jared's kids are two of my favorite children in the world. They're well behaved.
We have a side podcast where we rank children.
They're top ten for sure. No, love you, Jared. But yeah, he had Max. He said, "Did you like there might be Giants?" And Max just goes, "No,"
from across the room. Yeah.
I don't know why I made him sound like Joey. Like, no.
But I liked that he, you know, dressed the band down. But then it sounded like he was bringing up that they do the theme for Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Like, and you think that was going to further his disdain
like
for it. And then he was
like,
"Yeah, so they do some interesting stuff."
Yeah,
like
he's a big Disney head, and that means a lot to him, I'm sure.
Wow.
But yeah, it's funny because that song came on. I before I listened to you guys' podcast, you guys' playlist, I started listening to just the top five have, and that Mickey Mouse song is on there, and I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, I'm trying to have a morning.
It's nothing like a morning with Mickey.
Right. That's his home turf.
Yeah.
That's where he lives.
That was what do you guys think about that? The hat thing, I think he spent a lot. That's a very Jared like argument.
Sure.
Fans wear dumb clothes.
I don't
know
what hats he means. It's like fedoras.
I think he means
something?
Fedora. Jeff, okay. Jeff famously, again,
well, I don't own a fedora. I know, Andrew, you don't own a fedora.
I don't.
Mike wears like a cabbie hat. He talked about Mike Stanley in there too.
What?
We don't wear cabbie hats.
But I also feel like I'm not here to defend the fans.
That's true. That's a good point.
I think that's a tough line to draw because that's a lot of times what people have problems with any band for. Like 311, I think most people just don't like the fans. Sublime.
Oh, no, I think they don't like the music.
Yeah, I don't care
for the
music.
That's also fair. All right, Dave Matthews Band then, I'll say.
Sure,
I think that's mostly
fine.
The fans.
Right.
Because the music is at most boring.
It's a trifle. In the grand scheme of things, a Dave Matthews Band song.
But so
is,
then, I'm sorry.
No. I don't. I mean, I dislike Dave Matthews, but I don't think it's hurting anyone.
Yeah. Okay. Right. That's fair.
But then I guess I say to you, what band has fans where you go, man, the fans of that band are so good.
Dude, love Limp Bizkit, actually.
No.
Hate the music, love the fans.
Yeah, I don't like any, because like some people define themselves, like, you know, Deadheads or whatever Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Parrotheads.
Yeah. And like, I think any cult that defines itself on the devotion
Juggalos.
To, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's, I think fandom is bad.
Yeah, we were just talking about Fish fans before this and how like they're packing out Madison Square Garden
for like 11 nights. Yeah.
But like they're
good for them.
Tickets are so expensive and it is so weird that like Tommy was saying that somebody traded like an unused iPhone for a ticket to this thing.
To see
Fish one time.
Right?
It's so weird that something that speaks to me zero.
Yeah.
Someone is willing to give up like the most precious thing in the world,
yeah.
A new iPhone.
How many times have you seen They Might Be Giants?
Oh, 38.
Really?
Damn.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow, what about you, Joe?
Three.
Nice.
They were my first concert.
Which puts you in second place.
We should vote on which one is more.
Yeah, pop off in the comments of who's seen the more shows.
38 versus 3.
Yeah. We want you to decide.
Yeah.
You, the fans.
Because as we said, we love fandom. The most our nation's most precious resource. Dude,
they might be Giants fans have names like that, like parrots or whatever, or parrotheads.
No, I think so. There's attempts within the community to get it happening, yeah. But it thankfully has not.
The name's too long. Yeah.
What about big boys?
I think it's an interesting. I think it maybe speaks to a criticism of the band is that I do think that there is a thing where, and it's they. I've heard it talked about a few places where. I do think there is a certain, if you go to a concert, it's not like it's like filled with fans who have been around since the 80s. It's perpetually like 16 to 28 year olds.
Interesting.
New dorks.
Right.
Who find their
that's
music.
A good fan name.
That is very good, dorks. But don't steal it from me.
I've thought about that, and I feel like it's like maybe speaks to something about what it is that's appealing and what might turn. I do, you know, Joe and I were talking about, like, they definitely don't, for better or worse, they like sex is not really on the table at all in these songs.
And yeah. So, what about that song about the table?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about death. The sex is implied.
Yeah. Death on the table, but yeah, and so I think there is something about that the kind of like they're very interested in death, but again, it's not in a very
cool
it's
way.
Or even a very sometimes it is in an adult way, mm-hmm. but I think it's also in a slightly cartoonish way.
Yeah,
and I think you know there's really not. You know, there's maybe like five songs where I could go like, I bet that's autobiographical. But there's really a complete avoidance of the personal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those kind of things are maybe like, I can feel that as a criticism. And I can see why that would be appealing to younger, kind of nerdier people who probably aren't themselves very comfortable talking about sex. And I think also like, who also have maybe not had a lot of life experiences.
Yeah.
And so a song about a car crash is more interesting than a song about a, you know, painful breakup yeah. or a seduction.
Yeah.
And so I can see that being a turnoff. I mean, I guess the plus side is like, again, especially in like the early 90s, it was nice to be able to listen to music that's like, this song is being weird about women. Like, yeah. you know, like there's none of that in the catalog.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not through being so, although I think they are concerned about that, but I not like that they were so on point with their songs about, it's just that they kind of like don't, not too many of them exist.
Right. 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 Yeah. That's a good point is that they definitely avoid controversy. Tommy, you looked up controversies,
literally
right?
Literally nothing. Well, yeah,
of
like
course not.
You always search the band and controversy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I found something that I...
That's even the... there's even an old Onion behind the music about They Might Be Giants focuses on Linnell's Tetris addiction.
Oh, that's so good. I found something that I, like nobody else is bitching about this, but I thought it was interesting that their name... their first name was El Grupo do Rock and Roll.
Which, thank mm-hmm. God. They did not stick with that.
Because they were doing their first performance was for a Sandinista rally in Central
yeah.
Park. Yeah.
Exactly. So they had that, and then they changed it to They Might Be Giants. But it was because they had a friend who was a ventriloquist who had that name and then dropped it, and they just picked it up.
Yeah.
I didn't
I
know
think
that.
That's weird.
I had no idea. That I knew that they were also considering calling themselves Dump Truck.
Right.
Too,
ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I go back and forth on whether I think that's a good or a bad name.
And they also considered Bitch Piglet. that's a Limp Bizkit alternative name.
Oh, God.
That is Tommy's nickname.
Jesus. And we're defending this bit. How are we on the same echelon as whoever came in to defend
to
a
defend.
Band that was going to be called Bitch Piglet?
But in a universe where a different butterfly flapped its wings,
right.
They're on your guys' podcast going, you know, Bitch Piglet at a certain age is important for young men.
When you hit that age and that voice, that chainsaw voice hits your ears, there's nothing better, baby. So wait, what's
this?
You know,
I'm a piglet head. I'm a litter mate.
I'm a suckle bug. What can I say?
No.
Points.
Wow. We should take that over. That's ours now. We're going to do the same thing that they did with that name. Now that At Midnight's done with points, we're taking them.
Okay, here's a criticism.
Best of luck to you.
I want you guys to respond.
Okay, here's a criticism.
Yeah, sure.
That I found on Twitter.
Always a good resource.
I've decided that They Might Be Giants is a bad band because none of the members are gay.
Oh.
Okay.
Your thoughts.
Well, we saw this in the cafe before we came
Yeah. And you had some intel.
Tough to defend. I mean, there are rumors about the behavior of the guitarist in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That he apparently, I guess, at some early meeting with their producer, arrived wearing nail polish, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "I'm gay." Is that a problem? And hard to know whether that was sincerely felt or just some sort of his political agitation at this time. Yeah. So, shrug.
Yeah. And also, like, do we mean just the main two?
I know,
there's a full band, right? I don't even know.
Yeah, but I think they are all married to women.
Gotcha.
Oh, man. We have some
tough
updates
to defend.
Here. Ryan Douglas has chimed in.
Oh now here we go.
Awesome.
He's now Ryan will bring the heat.
There's an article with some controversy.
You know, I'll concede the is it a band that mostly attracts, sort of difficult to take, nerdy, straight white dudes? Yes.
Yes.
And is that the and are we two examples? Yes. and is that the best?
No.
Did you guys pre-write this part?
No, I just know the chorus of this song. But like, there are lots of examples of bands that all of the members are straight. Like,
name one.
That's a good. I don't know. I don't think that. I think that's not a good thing, but that none of them are. But how can you build your band that way? Well, actually, you're not in. You, my best friend, we are not going to start a band unless
unless you make some moves.
Unless we start kissing right now.
I can tell you how Tommy came up with that that question.
He came up with it?
Yeah.
Deplorable McNamara?
We do a research tactic where we search the band and gay.
Idiot hatred.
But that's nice that it was not used as a slur, but in fact,
right. The complete opposite.
Critique from the left.
Yeah. I have some alternative facts. I searched it on Google and I found an Urban Dictionary term for. A fan of They Might Be Giants is called They Might Be Gay Wads. So speak to that. Well,
that's hateful. And, people who dislike the band are clearly homophobic.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. That's fair.
Tom has an Urban Dictionary Word of the Day calendar.
Yeah.
why don't they make those? That would be a wildly successful.
We're going to sell these on our website.
Horrible.
Go to our Patreon. We don't have it yet.
Really terrible.
The one controversy I found is an article from October 6th, 1992.
Good.
17 injured in stage collapse.
Oh,
You knew this?
Yeah.
The famous Majeska stage collapse.
Mm-hmm. This is the shortest article of all time. It's from Milwaukee.
Stage fall. It bad.
Giants to blame?
Bad band.
Hemingway was tasked with writing the shortest, saddest story.
Concert ends. Never played.
Curse this band for having such a long name.
Right. That's why Hemingway never wrote it.
Right.
All right. So it's
jealous that Fitzgerald was able to.
Yeah.
It says, okay, concert fans rushed the stage when the singer of an alt-rock band told them to ignore fire laws and, I quote, "go ahead and polka." And that caused the platform to collapse. And there was minor injuries, it looks like. But the person who wrote this on our post said that as an example of they have no concern for the welfare of their clearly idiotic fans.
That's
but
very
funny. But you know,
that's Mike McRae, great comedian. Mike McRae. He's a Texan, but he's brilliant. He's in the Toy Story video games.
Oh wow!
As what?
He voices Woody and Buzz. He's like a brilliant.
Wow!
Those are the roles.
Yeah, yeah. That's the two people that would be voiced in the no one's playing as Slinky Dog.
No one's making their millions as that damn potato.
That's cool.
Was that Jerry Stiller the potato?
Don Rickles.
It's Rickles.
Oh, yeah. Is it Rickles? Wow.
Who was Jerry Stiller? He was the wait.
Wasn't he in it?
Was he the potato?
Jerry Stiller's not in it.
But his
Estelle
Harris. Yeah, his television wife is Mrs. Potato.
Yeah,
that's probably what I was saying. Made me confused. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
And he kind of looks potato-ish.
That's true.
In real life.
He's a golden brown.
Yeah.
he was brilliant in Seinfeld and in King of Queens. Jerry Stiller. Yeah. Isn't he great?
Yeah, he's great.
So let's make this an appreciation of Jerry Stiller.
I'm on board.
Easy, I wonder if they're going to defend Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if they're going to bring him back for Kevin Can Wait, because they're making that cast the same as King of Queens now. They're bringing in Leo Remini. Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, this has been enough talk about...
Well, did you hear, though, that when Jerry Stiller does performances, he urges people to rush the stage? So I think his downfall is forthcoming,
right.
Go ahead,
polka if you want.
Yeah. But I'll say this, you know, you have to pick sides here. If we're going to say too uptight, too rule-abiding, too nerdy, I think not. I think there's a reporter in Milwaukee who has other information.
People were hospitalized.
Yeah, ignore the fire laws.
Yeah.
It's never the bands that you think on these, like, collapses. Like, the other one was, like, Sugarland, that country band.
What was their hit?
There was, like, a fire or something in their concert.
Sugarland.
I forget.
I remember the Great White Fire Pyrotechnics. Yeah. I remember that happening, because I think it happened in Connecticut.
Oh,
that's where I'm from.
That. Jeff Osterman's book.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never the bands you think.
Never.
Well, I think it's cool that they urge their fans to rush the stage for a polka song, which is a good song.
Famous polka. I was at a show in my hometown of Napa at the Uptown Theater, which was a big movie theater that I spent a lot of time at as a kid. And then it was turned into like an old school 30s movie palace that had been like sliced up into like four theaters. And then they restored it all into one gigantic stage where they can screen films, but they also have like pretty big acts come through now. Mm-hmm. And so They Might Be Giants was going to play, and it was like unthinkable to me, you know, like my high school self.
Town.
Yeah. And this was like after I'd moved away and stuff, but I was like, oh, I got to go back for that. And my family likes them, and so we were all going to see them together, which was really nice. And we went, and my mother knew, I guess I should be careful with this story. My mother knew the guy who runs it. And he was like telling all these stories of like, your son wants to meet him. I'll you know, he's going to meet him afterwards.
And
I was already kind of like, oh, I know they don't like that. I don't want to, you know, like, but also like, I gotta, then they were urging people to, it was a seated venue, and they were urging people to get up. And people kept going, like so many ushers would go and sit everyone down. And then they'd be like, oh, you know, we're sorry, we're being told, can't happen. And then like 5 songs later, I'd be like, all right, now we're near the end of the show here. Everyone can stand up. And the ushers would go around. And they kept doing it. And the people were getting so mad, the people were in the theater. And then on like one of their last songs, they had a confetti cannon. And they just pushed the button and then had their stagehands feeding bag after bag of confetti into this thing and flooded. You couldn't see a thing.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was really like looking at a static color television.
Wow.
You couldn't see anything.
Wow.
And they filled this theater with confetti. They were clearly annoyed.
Yeah.
And then they like left. And the guy who ran it was like, yeah, you can't meet him. They're out there. He's bummed. Oh, they're never coming back. Oh.
Wow.
So it was like a whole ordeal.
Man, that is the most They Might Be Giants form of retaliation.
Yeah. Too much confetti.
Confetti-based aggression.
Meanwhile, Dave Matthews Band literally dumps shit in the Chicago River.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool. I wish I had seen that.
I want to do that next time I have a set that I'm frustrated with. Yeah.
Bring out the confetti.
Too much confetti.
Oh, come see me at El Cortez. Feeding confetti into the...
Right.
Good El Cortez shout out.
I want to. Did you have another? I'm very eager to hear what Mr. Douglas has.
Oh yeah, please.
Oh, okay. He and I have had conversations about it.
It's rough. It makes my feelings hurt.
Oh, he has a lot to say about
oh
this.
Oh, my God.
We'll read it.
In my peripheral, that's so much.
It's a
that's
lot.
So much maybe text.
Lot. But I'll let's read into the record first that Ryan Douglas has been melting down on Facebook recently at the idea that anyone in middle school wasn't listening to Led Zeppelin and reading Lord of the Rings. And he's disgusted and infuriated that anyone would claim they did otherwise. And if you didn't, you're diseased and crippled emotionally and wrong. So that's let's hear from this. Okay. You know.
Okay. So now we can read this under the color lens of that.
Oh my God. That's so
all right.
Funny.
This is my least favorite band of all time. It's like the kid that was uncool in high school grew up and never learned that the reason he had no friends was because he had no self-awareness of how he presented himself or needed to cultivate any taste or personality that someone could find enjoyable. Not surprised that a bunch of people I know who like them dress like a mother is planning a 13-year-old's outfit for a pool party when the kid can't swim.
It's always about the clothes.
Yeah.
Can we...
And from Ryan Douglas.
Yeah.
Joe is wearing.
I am wearing a Big Bird shirt.
But when am I not?
I mean, I love that shirt. That's a sick shirt. Can you swim? I can't swim.
I can swim.
I can kind of swim, but I'm also not on trial here.
No.
All right. So the next post is he goes on for quite a bit.
Yes.
In quotes, we're going to make music for nerds. Okay. Well, the rest of us got professional help and aren't hung up on our past selves. They Might Be Giants is the equivalent of the new comic who moves to NYC, and a big part of their onstage persona is they wear a shirt from a sports team from the city they're from. Ooh. Tommy Mack, shout out. Finally, I didn't even get to the fact that the lyrics are not only just fun, but encourage the creative capacities of someone who found Tom Lehrer very talented and protected themselves from love because it was too scary.
Okay.
Wow.
Can I say really quickly, Ryan Douglas, more like Run-On Douglas.
Oh, yeah. More like Run-On Hirschberg.
Yeah, I could do with a little Doug less.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He really dug himself into a fucking hole.
More like crying Douglas.
This from a man whose defining characteristic is he has opinions on the MTA.
Oh, right.
Oh, man.
I love Ryan Douglas so much, and I love that he doesn't like this band.
It makes
band
me
that,
happy, too.
That means so much to me.
It's good to have a friction point.
But it's weird how it always, like, all of the clothing seems to factor into a lot of people's criticism,
well,
I don't understand.
Well, and so I guess, but to me, I feel like that is partly a, I do think that I guess I understand, and I think it's fine and defensible if what you want from rock music is for it to be cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's, and I do think, like, the early days of the band, I think that do-it-yourself thing and the you know, the phone machine and the two guys on stage with, like, a drum machine and creating all the tracks and writing these very good, like, because I think they can really write a song.
Truly. Some of the most beautiful melodies
you've
ever
heard.
Incredibly
good melodies, harmonies. I think that the lyrics are good and they're not... They're not like some sort of lazy Jonathan Richman thing, who I love.
Sure.
But it's not like it's a three-chord song with some kind of goofy lyrics that seem like they were kind of like come up with on the bus. Or, you know, it's like their model is so clearly the Beatles, and like their debt to the Beatles is so huge. Like I think they're really, you know, they're not like a fuck around band.
No.
Which is, you know, uncool in its own way, I guess. But like, but I'll concede that they're not like sex icons in any way. It's definitely not about being cool. And so, if you know, I guess if that's what you want, then
right.
By all means, avoid it. But I guess
if you're looking to be cool, crack open J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings.
Right.
You know who is a sex icon, though? Marge Simpson.
Frodo.
I mean, Aragorn's probably a sex symbol, right?
Mm-hmm. So wait, let's read from that article before.
Which one I sent you. Let me see.
The guy who says he's a doctor in the end.
I don't think I read that article.
I posted it in the comments of the Facebook thing too. I can find it.
Also. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You take over.
And I saw that you posted. I had actually encountered this article before.
Oh yeah.
Is it the something awful one?
Yeah, something awful.
Oh, okay. I found it.
Oh, okay, cool.
Another reputable source.
That too.
For
so this guy starts. I'll just paraphrase the first part. He sums up by saying that he didn't want to really write anything about them for a long time because he thinks that they do what they do well because they are making fun of themselves a little bit.
Yeah,
they're goofy nerds, but then he kind of makes fun of their fans again. And he says they're irrelevant, which I think is somewhat fair. I don't think people talk about them a lot now, but except for their children's stuff. Like,
I don't think they've ever really been talked about a lot.
Well, the fact that they started in 82 blew my mind because I feel like I didn't know about them until like 10 years ago.
Right.
And it was one of those bands that I was like, it's too late for me, I think. Like, I felt uncool and not liking Istanbul, but to this guy. So this guy says, this is David Thorpe of somethingawful.com.
Oh, he's actually great. No, I'm kidding.
This is written in 2005, so take that with a grain of that year.
Right, so it's before the Elysis released, and so he would have recanted all that once he had heard the Shadow go.
No, actually, update 2017 still sucks. No. All right, so he says regular nerds are okay. They're willing to stay up until 6 in the morning watching horror movies and drinking Mountain Dew, and they eventually grow up and get rich and let you sleep on their couch as long as you want. Sure, they may be a little too fond of D&D, Dungeons and Dragons and Dio.
What a bad joke that
is. I hate that. But that doesn't mean that they aren't cool in their own way. But some nerds are more than just nerds. Some of them are real creeps. I'm sure you knew a few in high school. The kids who liked trains and transistor radios and freaked out if anyone mentioned sex and then had to change schools because they got caught masturbating in class. Who knew this guy?
Right.
The worst of the nerds tended to pair off. There'd always be one who was a squirrely, introverted spastic, and one who was a tiny bit better looking and had maybe kissed a girl, but was still a complete dweeb.
And if you're not the one who's a tiny bit better looking and has maybe kissed a girl, but is a complete dweeb, then you are. The one.
Of course, the squirrely one secretly thinks that his dapper friend is the coolest dude in the universe and is eaten up by jealousy, and the dapper one secretly thinks that the squirrely one is cramping his style. This dynamic generally manifests itself as loud arguments over Star Trek minutiae. These duos can be found at just about any school in the nation.
Especially Columbine.
Oh, shit. Drawn together
you
by the fact
that... You
can't
turn it off. You just have to be shocking.
Yeah. Oh,
what a
man.
Disease
he
you
lives
have.
On the edge. That's why he's always Googling those edging things. All right, let's see. Imagine two of these kids forming a band. Surely they would have shrill, irritating voices, hilariously weird lyrics, and zany music videos. Their music would be just like them, sexless and jittery, hiding behind wackiness and intellectual airs to conceal torment and misery. Pathetic and annoying. Their fan base would consist of all the outcasts nerdy enough to tolerate them, mirroring the sad rejects sticking together dynamic of their friendship. I guess I don't have to be coy about naming the band to which I refer, since you already read the title of this article. I'm talking about They Might Be Giants, the novelty indie pop group with a massive cult following of nerds, children, and poor souls who don't know any better. Who's that?
That's us. Yeah. That's Joe and I. I mean, we ain't right nerds, here. Dude. We live in New York.
Yeah.
They started out as a typical nerd duo like the one I described. John Linnell, the skinny introverted spaz, and John Flansburgh, the slightly more hip one. It's easy to picture them in school pretending to be robots, asking to smell girls' hair, and refusing to change in front of the other boys in the locker room.
Asking is polite.
That's
that's just manners.
It ain't illegal to smell them. That's what I heard Tommy saying earlier. When they got home, I imagine that they'd put ice packs over their black eyes and fuck around with tape recorders all night.
Right, which to me, I mean, I guess, like, that doesn't, the last thing doesn't sound like a bad thing to me.
No.
Yeah.
So maybe that's fine.
Where maybe that's where I'm confused. Like, I'm in favor of the high school kids who go home and fuck around with tape recorders.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
Like, that's what Minor Threat did or something. You
know? Cool musicals about the Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah, they're kind of the cool guys. Yeah.
I used to do that. I'd make podcasts. And I'd start out and say, pow, I just shit my britches.
Right. What? I don't know how much of this you're going to read.
Oh, that's how much more is there? There's a lot, actually. So much.
He goes
there's
album by album.
Oh, he does?
Yes.
Well, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot.
I got to read those.
Yeah, we don't have to read all of this. I think that he's pretty much gotten to the point here. It's a lot of more of the same of like they're nerds, blah blah blah, mm-hmm. And then he gets into album by album.
Yeah, I think he gets into some songwriting criticism.
Let me see,
which is maybe a little more interesting and a little more dangerous for us to defend.
Let's see.
But I think I guess I also want to like, you know, yeah, the weird. Anger at nerd, the weird nerd jock thing about being upset with them is so strange to me, as if jocks are the people in high school that we like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Who are,
as if they're the ones who are treating girls in high school well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit, that's a good
that's
point.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Ask to smell the hair. But
you're right. It does get into sorry.
No.
It does get into song criticism a little bit.
What's the music that jocks are listening to?
Right,
like top 40.
Top 40, I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what the kids.
Good
when
answer.
That's what like the kids when I was when I was in school liked, because I thought that I got really into rap when I was like 14, 15,
mm-hmm.
And I thought that that would make me like cool to those kids. But then I remember this, the quarterback of our football team was sitting next to me in like English class or whatever. And I had a CD, like a Walkman thing.
Uh-huh.
And I had a mix CD that I made that was like half like Tupac and Outkast.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other half was like pop hits or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's going to be so like he wanted.
Right.
He would borrow my CD player during class and listen. And then I would watch him skip the songs that I thought he would think were cool and then listen to Jimmy Eat World. And I was like, oh, fuck. I don't know what these people want.
Your calculations were off, nerd.
Right. Well, and I guess I do feel a little bit of, I mean, and I think this is maybe something I genuinely don't understand about people's, mostly people just haven't actually listened to it.
True.
I can understand that there is a certain like hyperact, like if we're really just talking truly just about the songs,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're maybe a little hyperactive, or it can be a little hard to find the emotional endpoint. Although I do think on the first four records, it's actually not as buried as,
what album,
people say.
What album is Birdhouse in Your Soul from?
It's on the
Flood.
On Flood, their third.
That was something that, I mean, we'll talk about it when we play it, but that song very much surprised me. It wasn't what I was used to hearing from them.
It's their best.
It's the gateway to describing them
it's
to people who.
It's an incredible song.
Yeah. Just going back a little bit, I think something we haven't talked about is it's very in my experience, it's very important that you find this particular band at a very certain point in your life.
Yeah.
And this band is very hard to get to show to someone who is out of high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the, you know, the quirky songwriting and how the timbre of the two vocalists' voices is very hard for your ears to wrap around if a voice in a song should sound this way, mm-hmm. and not
if you're a voice queen.
Right. I will say one alternative fact to that is that Tommy got into them recently when he learned the ABCs.
Here they come.
But I think the jitteriness and the kind of rinky-dinkness of the earlier tracks to me doesn't sound actually significantly different than all sorts of 80s music that people are extremely into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then lyrically, in terms of like weirdness or out, like there is not a single song that is any weirder than most Beatles songs. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like they're,
that's
they're,
a good point.
There is.
Yeah, that's like, a, that's so true.
There's
yeah.
no there's no such thing as a weirder lyric than the lyrics to Come Together or like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, so it's so and in the in a very and I think that they tap into the same thing that the Beatles do where it's like it is it's not just nonsense. It is like it's usually evocative.
It and, means and, something.
Yeah. Or even if it's not. And I well, and I think also people have a suspicion of them that they're writing like allegories and that, you know, like. Fuck that. I don't want to decode this song.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah,
there
yeah.
are some songs that maybe are like that. But I also think for the most part, they're doing it the same way that the Beatles are, where it's like, I don't know that She Came In Through the Bathroom Window has like a meaning, you mm-hmm. know? But it like you hear it and it's like Sunday's on the phone to Monday. And it's like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's like pretty and interesting. Mm-hmm. And what does yeah. that mean? And I think that's how most of their lyrics are operating. But I think that that kind of like college-y thing that, they, you know, like they might be giants have going on makes you think that there's maybe more you like puts people gets people defensive like
yeah
oh I'm like I'm meant to work to you know and I do think there are I think like Birdhouse in Your Soul and Anna Ng actually are ones where it's like there is a cogent explanation behind the whole thing that
yeah.
you do probably have to work to and I can see how that turns people off but also
people don't want to do homework they don't want a homework band
they don't right, want to be like right. symbologist something something from the Da Vinci Code
right
I forgot his name but still right. make,
but I yeah. don't and that's the thing is I do think people are into think that there's like symbology or I think especially in the 90s that was like their rep mm-hmm. was like they were like these like there were hidden meanings and I don't think that's the case
no
I uh-huh. think there, it's just kind of this sort of obtuse songwriting or yeah. something. Oblique mm-hmm. is the word I want.
I think that we can jump into the playlist
yeah,
now.
I'm done. Okay. Yeah.
This has already been, I'd say, of all the episodes we've done, this is probably the best argument that anybody's made, like the most knowledgeable yeah. argument. Oh. So thank you for providing that information.
And I will
for
say
coming
the Dial
prepared.
A Song thing is very cool. And
that is,
changes,
yeah.
like,
it's still going.
Just as someone
no,
trying to,
yeah. it's not.
It's not?
No.
That's, oh, goodness gracious. I'm sorry.
yeah.
Sorry that you just called us knowledgeable and then I
fuck
provided.
Off my podcast. yeah.
They were doing it last year again, and then they, but then they turned
oh,
it off.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to break this up. Joe sent us three songs, uh-huh. and Andrew sent us another three songs. We'll start with Joe's.
Oh, okay.
That's the order they're in on my Spotify.
That sounds good. so do we...
And yeah, and how does this... Are we listening yeah. to the...
So we're going to listen to we're going to listen to snippets.
Great, great.
Okay. So if there's any particular part you want me to jump to...
No.
In any of these songs. Otherwise, I'm probably just going to jump around
the
a little
first
bit.
One is my favorite song of theirs.
Metal Detector?
Metal Detector is
it's
my favorite
so
song
good.
Of theirs.
It might be mine, too.
Yeah. But it also might be, you know, on... okay, here it is.
Oh, no, you can keep talking.
Oh, okay.
You can
talk see, there's Linnell's voice, which I feel like is a giant turnoff to a lot of people.
There's just the sound of the call of the wild overcoming the fear.
This weird Alice a little bit.
Yeah, and I've got but so the offspring guy. To help you they've understand got street cred, don't they?
waiting there beneath the sand, my metal detector.
The guitar's coming in.
Is with me all of the time.
Right here. So good.
I'm the inspector.
You got a classic minor verse, major chorus.
Yep.
Past the volley,
past like Fight Up the Pixies
yeah.
song. Documentary on them is called.
But it, and then there's that kind of like weird menace to this song about. It's a song about a metal detector, but it's like about what is hidden and understood only
yeah.
by you. And this person is wrong to think this, probably. This bridge is so cool. Oh well.
Every seashell has a story. Cool accordion. We didn't talk about the accordion. The accordion
oh yeah,
factors
sure.
in a lot.
Which is definitely off-putting to people.
Yeah, as you know,
accordion's very divisive. I feel like yeah. with a lot of bands.
oh
But then, like, the Arcade Fire uses the Accord. I'm not super familiar
with
the
Arcade Fire.
Well,
they're not darlings anymore.
Yeah, they're
torn apart
now.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
last two albums have been trash.
Pitchfork gave their last album like a 5.
Yeah, and Reflector was terrible.
Yeah, I agree.
And I loved the albums, the 3 before that.
When I
pretended to like Reflector.
I saw.
Yeah.
I once saw a show with my friends in high school that was, it was the Arcade Fire opening up for Chromeo, opening up for the Unicorns.
Wow.
And the Arcade Fire, like, wasn't anybody. They were the opening band. And on the first, like, one of the first songs, the Win Butler, the guitarist, broke a string on his guitar and then didn't know how to restring his guitar and had to, like, stop the song and say, "Does anybody here know how to string a guitar?"
Whoa.
That's a great story.
And then my friend Joe, who's now in the Downtown Boys. You guys know the Downtown Boys? Great band.
Oh, nice.
They just put out an album.
Check out the Downtown Boys' new album.
And he restrung the guy's guitar. Because the leader of the Arcade Fire didn't know how to string a guitar. And I don't know why. To this day, I don't know why. How you start a band and not know.
But
and
I,
be
I
the
played
guitarist.
Guitar for like 10 years, and I don't know how to restart your
Is
guitar.
That true?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, my goodness. You should meet my friend Joe.
Yeah.
And Tommy is the lead man for the Arcade Fire.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a weird coincidence.
Yeah. It's really cool that we
were
able to get
you.
Your
last album sucked.
Yeah, you
Pitchfork
suck,
gave
Tommy.
Him a 5.
Everything now is not bad, the song.
But anyway, Metal Detector, great song. One of
my
favorite
songs. I don't love the verse, but that chorus is so great, and I think I wouldn't like the chorus as much without having that distinction.
As soon as he said every seashell had a story to tell, that's when I was like, I'm going to turn this down.
See, I like that there exists pop songs that talk about seashells. And
But it's also important, you know, that he's in that, as the lyric continues, he is dismissing... He is dismissing the idea of listening to a seashell and saying that is stupid.
Yeah.
And you must listen to the things that are
found
underground. And then there is a Moog solo, which is like the Metal Detector is going.
Yeah, it's as though the Metal Detector is doing a solo, which, as I say, it is maybe would turn people off of it.
No,
but
I think that's interesting.
To this guy,
I think that's why
it's
good to talk about him after we listen to him, because then it sells me a little bit more. Because listening to look. There are 4 ways to listen to music.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Tom's horrible theory.
I've just been using my ears.
I know.
Yeah, you're going to want to put it
I
up
hope
to your
the
heart.
Butt doesn't factor into this.
You don't want to keep that butt out of it. it's put it up to your chest. We only listened to this like hungover today,
absolutely.
Pretty much.
Sure.
I didn't give it a car. I didn't give it a walk.
Oh.
I didn't give it a gym.
Okay.
I only gave it a sitting here.
Yeah.
Those are basically
and
it.
And I agree. I agree.
That. Thank you. This is all I've been looking for this whole time. Yeah, Tommy shits on this every time. I think it's a different way to take in music, all of those
Because
ways.
The way you introduce it is you go, there are 4, now discounting live, right. Which is like, well, that's a
no,
way
it
to
doesn't
listen
count
to
live. No, yeah. I'm talking about
live is important.
I'm talking about for the sake of these playlists, though.
Yeah.
we're going to go make them play for us live, these 6 songs?
They live in Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's, they're playing Central Park next week.
Yeah, we're going to go see them.
Yeah.
For free?
Yep.
Wow.
Should we go?
Well, let's go. Fine. Hold it. Pause the podcast.
Bonus episode.
But unfortunately, listening to a band live is not a way to listen to music.
That is not a way.
Sadly.
That's a way to experience
music. Well, we could drive
music.
There and listen to them in the car.
Right. We could.
That's fair. We could drive by the concert.
Maybe there's a Blink
around.
Fitness nearby that we could work out during while they play.
Yeah.
That's the gym I go to.
Is it?
I love a Blink Fitness.
I have never been in a gym. True. It's true.
It's not a way to listen to music.
Yeah, you're missing out on.
Well, as a They Might Be Giants fan, I find it hard to get changed in front of other people. So I don't go.
You know that at adult gym, like, you don't have to do that. You can just go in dressed in your clothes.
I don't know.
There's not like a coach at the gym.
Even in my Big Bird shirt.
I took theater in high school instead of gym. Like, those were the 2 options.
Wait, what?
You could choose either theater or gym.
Yeah. Get out of town.
In college, I didn't want my girlfriend to know that. So I was trying to, like, make it. She was like, oh, did you guys have to, like, shower together? And I was like, yeah, everyone was in, you know, one big shower. But I, like, didn't know what it was.
The shower head was huge.
And we used one big toilet, too.
There's one gigantic bar of soap, and the guys would pass it over their heads.
And then we had one big towel we'd all roll up in.
My best friend fell down the drain.
So oh no! Oh, I love that. Oh, brother! What a great band.
It's totally untrue, though, that we pretty much did that. Yeah, that's funny.
Wait. So let's. Yeah, we should get
okay. Yeah, next song. This next song, I really enjoyed. I'll go ahead and spill those beans right off the bat.
Their best song, probably. Maybe not my favorite one, but.
I read an
top three.
Somebody listed the top 10 or whatever, and this was like number 4 for them.
Oh,
and
okay.
Did you say it was Anna?
Anna Ng.
That was the number 1 on that
it's
person's
really
list.
Really good.
I've been listening to this song for 27 years.
Big drums.
You can hear in the alley by the light switch. Who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet.
Make a little birdhouse in your soul. I'm the only bee in your body.
Yeah.
It's so rhythmic. It's just so pleasing.
Do you know what this song's about?
I have a secret to tell from my electrical well.
Do you want us to like the song? Message,
and I'm no.
Much like metal detector. It's about
also about
object.
A metal detector.
No, it's about a nightlight.
Sung from the point of view.
Yeah.
Oh.
My story is infinite.
Shaped like a blue canary.
Yeah.
You can hear in the alley by the light switch. Who watches
this
over
is like a pleasing melody. You know?
It is so pleasing.
Yeah.
So
and the guitars are heavy in this one, too. The only in your body. The reason I said I think they get better than it is, I think they're worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are.
Which I didn't expect.
They are actively into trying to write an interesting, like a music that hasn't been
written.
Yeah. Ooh, a little goofy here, but
I feel like I'm trying to have this part in there for the goofy part.
Trying to listen to it with a little more critical ear than I usually would.
I'm not actually your friend, but I am. There's a picture opposite me of my primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free.
What can you say, Tish?
Oh,
I love the chorus so much of that song.
It's so good.
It's really, really nice. Oh, I think that's something I really like about them is the I feel like they do this thing where it's kind of this like there will be some sort of like central or extended metaphor or idea, but that they do a really good job of kind of like literalizing it at the same time where it's like, so there's this idea that the chorus is about seemingly leaving a place in your heart for light and love to be in the world, right, is like the like message or something, but that it is quite literally about a nightlight
and that it's
he is going to tell you the story of how he is in an outlet across the room from a picture of a lighthouse, and boy, if I was a lighthouse, I'd be bad at it. You know, which is certainly very cute.
Yeah.
But I like that it's not just, you know, be lovely like a nightlight. You know, it's like I am a nightlight.
Yeah.
And be lovely like me, but also this is what my life is like. I think is very fun and interesting. Yeah. It's kind of like literalizing a metaphor or something.
I'm so glad you're here because I have a real problem. I don't know if you guys have talked about this at all, but I have a real problem like listening to lyrics. Like songs to me are, I'm listening to melodies and riffs and like the instrumentation and stuff like that. And it's very rare that a song's lyrics really like hit home to me. And I realize with this type of band, that's like, that's their bread and butter.
But that made me really happy when I learned that about you and that you like this band is because I do, like for me, a huge part of the appeal was the lyrics to start. And I didn't know anything about music when I was in fifth grade and started listening to this band. But like, I do think they're musically so, so good.
So
but
good.
I think when I'm feeling defensive about them, I do think so many people's conception is, you know, Particle Man, just like this sing-songy kind of like nonsensey lyric.
Tuba and accordion.
Four chords, you know, and get out. And that they are, you know, really beautiful
composers,
melodists. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we've talked about it with that. Dan Perlman and Nick Nanny said the same thing about that you said about, like, the lyrics didn't really matter to them about for Steely Dan.
Oh.
It was more about the music because they're also very, like, they put together stories that don't necessarily exist in reality. But the music is still, it can be interesting to someone who doesn't care about the lyrics.
It's still pleasurable to the ear.
Yeah, yeah, I very much am lyrically motivated. Like, sure. That means a ton to me within music, which is why I think that sometimes I'll let shittier music affect me just because I like the lyrics.
Uh-huh. Do you have a favorite lyricist?
What's the name of the guy from The National?
Behringer, right?
Yes, people are gonna fucking hate me.
Yeah.
He was on Comedy Bang Bang. Actually, he's really funny.
I think it's Matt Behringer.
That's it.
Bobby Moynihan.
That's Behringer. he might be my favorite current lyricist. Nice. Right now, I love what he does with The National. What if I said Father John Misty? I feel like people would shoot me
through the computer.
But yeah, I loved that song, and not even knowing what it meant, and now knowing what it means, at first I started to dislike
That's
it,
what
and
I
then when
figured.
You when you broke it down a little further, I started to enjoy it. So the next song is a little ditty called Statue Got Me High.
Wow.
I like this song, but I think that this will probably be the...
I think this was my least favorite.
Yeah, I think of the six that we prepared.
This is the only song that I looked at Tommy and I said, I can't do this right now.
I could have brought it back.
This is also extremely harsh production on this song.
Yeah.
But I think lyrically, this is maybe the one I admire the most of this group.
Yeah.
Of our six songs.
We probably won't get to it, but there's really cool baritone saxophone.
I mean, skip ahead.
No, I don't know. I don't know exactly where it is. Yeah.
Can they record it?
An awful lot of them. Yeah. So there's John Flansburgh is the guitarist. And then I think their first four records were just them. And then they finally got a backing band. But I think the first four records, Linnell is playing synth bass. Linnell is playing keyboards and accordion. Horns and woodwinds.
Yeah.
And then drums, I think Flansburgh is programming the drum machine.
Drum machine for the first four. Drum machine for the first four albums,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they were very into getting the best drum machines.
Yeah.
They weren't, I don't think they were trying to sound like a mechanical band in any way, but it still kind of like seeps in and is an interesting component.
Yeah.
That part.
I like hearing no whisper.
They're one of my favorite bands.
No, some people really start singing.
I wouldn't
funny
sing.
That.
I didn't sing, but that's what I tend to do. I'm not confident enough in my singing voice.
Oh, Joe, you got a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
I heard you sing the national anthem.
Oh, but I probably screwed it up somehow.
No.
Look it up.
No,
YouTube.
You did it perfectly. That bit's great. Check out that bit.
You.
Is it online? It's
Joe's really national anthem bit is a really
it's
fish bit.
Very funny.
No, it's very, very good.
I can't defend it.
No,
I feel like I talk about that bit a lot when I perform it on stage.
Oh, no.
Don't you hate this bit? It's not mine.
So that was Statue Got Me High.
Yeah. I probably should have picked a different one. I mean, no, I'll
speak
defend
to your level.
I feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel bad when we. I feel like our reaction sometimes makes people feel guilty.
Well, you're listening to it hungover. I would not want to listen to that hungover for the first time. Not at all. Oh my goodness.
Well, can I? I keep jumping out.
No.
Let you make your defense.
Well, I just like as a. I feel like as my musical taste sort of matured into what they are now, I sort of err more towards. I like. Garage rock, and I like a punkier sound, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think Statue Got Me High is a good example of They Might Be Giants trying to do a harder hard rock song, but with, you know, synths and Barry Saxes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I like that song so much at this point in my life. I don't know. What were you going to say?
Well, and I also think I think it is, they are. Something that they are doing is like they're actively they want your full attention the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the definition of annoying, which is a thing that makes you pay attention to it when you don't want to.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think for me, I don't put music on in the background kind of at all.
Hmm.
And so I think for a lot of people, that is part of what they want from music, is something that they're not giving 100% of their attention to,
yeah,
which is very fair. And I think this is, it's, you know, it's impossible to imagine making love to this music.
I was bring that up earlier.
You know, it's not music that you would, you know, just kind of like put on while people are like having dinner.
You know,
like the staccato, like guitar chops,
right,
and like and all that,
giant
all that
drums.
Kind of,
and
yeah, all that kind of, and like weird instrumentation that like appears, you know, halfway. Like there's not a clarinet in the beginning, but in the last third, suddenly this clarinet's, you know, and so I think that is also something where it's like, if that is not what you are interested in music,
you're not going to,
you know,
this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
And so it is, and especially, and then also like those first few records, where it's with the drum machine and stuff, just kind of by its nature has this kind of like sort of harsh, not very round tone.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the song is beating you
really
over the head.
You really
got to
hear
it.
Yeah. These trash can snare drums.
Right.
So yeah.
I think for me, a lot of what I think, one, The Hangover, we can't discount, we can't put that in there enough.
Nope.
But
and also,
also,
that's my movie ranking. One,
yeah,
The Hangover.
One, two, The Hangover 2. I think his voice was very grating to me.
Yeah.
This one more
one
than the other.
Yes.
And we realized they split the two main, the Johns, they split vocals pretty equally on their albums.
They're pretty
and
Beatles, Sing What You Write.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And every single song that we contributed is by the one John, by John Linnell.
What does that mean?
Their voices aren't very different. Like, I feel like it takes...
I think they're pretty different.
Yeah, but I don't know that I immediately could tell them apart when I first started listening to them. And I feel like I had friends who like began to hear it, but I don't think they're like why, like they
they're
are different. Yeah,
different.
Yeah,
but
and
they're different.
Yeah, and they're pretty nasal and
very nasal.
You know,
yes.
But also like, you know, for me, it's already not unlike my own singing voice, I think.
Ah.
So to me, it doesn't sound odd.
Yeah.
And I do think that might be part of the like coming to them early thing, is like it didn't occur to me to have a singer that sounds beautiful, you know, in a rock band.
Right.
But, you know, and again, boy, there are a lot of bands people think are cool that don't have beautiful singers.
I mean, I love the Hold Steady, are like my favorite band. He's an awful voice.
And Ben Folds gets a lot of criticism for being nasally. Mm-hmm. I think with this song specifically, the vocals are so crisp that you hear it more than the other songs.
Totally.
So it comes through, and when you're, you know, already wanting to be irritated by music.
Absolutely.
Let's jump over. Okay, so now these are Andrew's songs.
Now we're on my turf.
Yes. This song, it's been playing this whole time, but without the sound, so it's okay. This song is called Spiraling Shape.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Stop. Beautiful. As you fall,
hear me call. He's taking a little edge off with this one.
He does sound like you. I didn't hear it till you said it, and I'm like,
now I feel bad for talking poorly about
it. It's okay. Heard it all.
Is that right?
Listen to this piano coming in. Tommy, you're going to flip your lid.
Whoa! Like Tommy's lid just flipped right in front of our eyes.
It's like a peanut special.
Vibraphone comes back.
This could lead to excellence or serious injury. Only one way to know. Go, go, go. Go ahead.
just think it's a beautiful song, that cool kind of spiraling melody. And I think the lyrically, it's a very typical kind of Giants song where it's kind of like an actually very bluntly stated message, which is just like, you know, fads are sometimes not cool.
Yeah.
You know, in this kind of like why a spiraling shape? Why is that the, I don't know. It's comic how, blunt and almost brain dead the message behind the song is.
Yeah.
But the music is so pretty. Mm-hmm. And there's a very beautiful like vibraphone solo at the end.
And it gets real intense. It gets like,
it
very,
does, yeah.
And celebratory.
And he's so good, I think, at like, Linnell is really good at like these like interlocking parts where it's like he's going to introduce that backup vocal in the beginning, and then by the end it's just going to be going nuts, yeah, with like a round of like
chorus of,
yeah, and those vocals, harmonies, and the way that all those pieces interlock, and then he'll introduce some new like melodic phrase at the very end that he's like kind of screaming, and I just find it super thrilling.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite, actually, of all six. Mm-hmm. I, like, love that song. And yeah, that's the rare song from this podcast that I think I will continue to listen to, which I don't think I've really done.
I do a lot. I do that a lot with this. I got into ABBA from it.
Oh, Abba. Wait, yeah, you guys talked about ABBA?
Yeah, ABBA was great.
Everybody loves ABBA.
That's what we learned.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes, I hear you guys are going to do Devo. Come on.
Are we doing
Everybody
Devo?
Everybody loves Devo.
Oh, Quazala wants to do Devo,
yeah,
right?
We've talked about doing Devo.
So Quazala, yeah, like, that's the thing. He wanted ABBA and he wants Devo. We run into this on this podcast a bit,
no,
where we do bands.
We just like
those
to
bands.
Book people we think are funny.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I understand. But they need no defense.
Do you understand?
TMBG needs defense.
I get all this shit.
And
people
you bring
think this
us
with this band.
Fair. Now, you could have done better.
People did this with this very band where they were like, everybody loves my beat.
Yeah,
we were gratified to see. We
know,
saw
we
the thread
that,
and then we were like, oh, there's a lot of support here.
Almost so every band we do, somebody, this happens to us. Like, we fucking did Soulja Boy and people were like, oh, everybody loves Soulja Boy. No, they don't. And it was an old man.
Nothing's without its cult. Nothing's
everybody
without its
Jim
cult.
Jim Jones quote, right?
Yeah. do you know what movie Spiraling Shapes in?
What movie?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Brain Candy, Kids in the Hall
Kids
movie.
Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy.
Oh,
which,
that's fun.
You know.
Right. Which in
it has the same message.
Thematically appropriate.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, there you go.
I think I've gone back. So, I've gone back with ABBA. I've gone back with, what's another one we just did that I was like, I'm going to start listening to this. It was like when we did Journey, it got me listening to Cars and Styx.
Journey. Oh, yeah.
It's more that it inspired me to listen to other stuff around that.
Yeah. The Cars are great.
Cars are
I love
great.
The Cars.
Cars are incredible. Yeah. Everyone loves Cars.
Everyone loves
Cars.
Nobody's
would like,
never do
that. Yeah,
cars
we wouldn't
are,
do that.
I mean, the
They're
Cars have like five truly perfect songs.
Like all time.
Yeah. Like,
it's crazy.
Really just towering.
Yeah,
songs.
I like forgot how much I loved them. And then I was looking through their like Spotify top five and I was like, I love all of these songs.
Absolutely.
Every
and
single one
everyone
of them is a banger.
Does. You could play them at a wedding and everyone would be happy. It was happening. Everyone of every age.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I'm now a huge Yellow Card fan.
Right.
All right. The next song on this playlist.
The penultimate song.
Oh, yes. Joe, sorry. Did you want to say anything else about that?
About Spiraling like Shape?
Yeah.
No, I love... I think that song's great. I would have... If I had picked all six, Spiraling Shape definitely would have gone on it as well. What a great song.
I think it's a... I do think it's like a strong introduce people to the band.
Sure.
Song.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. And it's different from everything else, I feel like. It's I liked it a lot. This next song is Don't Let's Start.
Start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around how you get around. When you are alone, you are the cat, you are the bone, you are an animal. The words I'm saying now mean nothing more. And do I need a positive team? This don't you?
start. This is the worst part. Could believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart.
This is 1986. I think that's
that
just,
little part felt 80s, like
yeah.
Sure. I think that's just such a strong song, just a like pretty straightforward breakup song, and it's got some like playful lyrics, but I don't think it's like aggressively bizarre.
No,
I think, I think they're playful lyrics that could come from a lot of people's pens, but you know, and like, yeah, I'm very tickled by the like D world destruction over an overture, and do I need apostrophe T? Like the joke of including the apostrophe in the, you know, is fun to me. I guess I can see how it would be off putting, but I think it's like so clever and so fun, and then just that, yeah, it's just it's a cool sounding song.
It is.
I think it should be. I'm kind of amazed it wasn't like an even bigger hit for them.
Yeah, it's wild that it's not put on like new wave compilation, like alongside you know, like Tubeway Army or Joy Division or something like that.
But I think it's just a great song. This is that's like one of the songs that, you know, girlfriends relent on. They're like, oh, you can you can put that one.
I liked that one a lot. I think it is because it does feel more relatable or something. Like it feels like it, and I'm sure you're about to tell me that it's about a windmill or something.
Like, it's about a breakup. Yeah. It's a song about a breakup and being mad at a girl.
Yeah, I think that's why I loved that one so much. But also, it's just it's so fun.
It's about Nixon's deodorant.
I feel like that could have been in like a Tom Hanks movie soundtrack, like Big 90s, or something. Yeah,
It's weird. That their song, like They Might Be Giants songs, aren't used more in film, but like they'll score stuff write stuff specifically for film. But yeah, that shit, like a montage set to Don't Let Start, I think
absolutely
would not be unheard of. I like that that's a nice, cool, catchy song on their first album, which has a lot of textbook "this is a weird sounding song" songs on it, but then this little gem and a couple other ones, they're like songs like "She's an Angel" is a really lovely.
I almost included that one. Yeah, that's a really good one
On their first album.
"Nothing's
which
Gonna Change My Clothes" is a great.
That's really good
song.
One too. Oh man, they're so good.
I really love the album art for this one too. This one's fun. Oh, yeah. It's very
Rodney,
colorful and pretty.
Rodney Allen Greenblatt.
Oh. Jesus Christ. That's insane.
The notorious RAG. As they call them.
Yeah, that was a great song. Tommy, any thoughts here?
You already said I liked 90s. That one a lot.
Yeah, great song.
Last song here is called "Till My Head Falls Off."
So I picked that one. That one was that was kind of a personal choice for me, just because this was when I sort of like got into the band in a real way. Factory Showroom was the record that had just come out, and Metal Detector's on that one,
Spiraling Shape
is on that one, and that was so they were a 2-man band with they were doing everything for the first four records, and then in 94, they did a full band album and really kind of like going hard after grunge and whatever. And still, I mean, it's still, to listen to it now, I don't think you would even know that. Mm-hmm. But they like got a producer who was like, okay, guys, like, put the clown noses away. We're going to track this all live. Like, we're going to track the vocals separately, but you are going to play these songs live in the studio with your full band. If you want horns on them, we can bring them in, but we're not overdubbing any synthesizers. Wow. We're not, you know, like, no glockenspiels, you know? And so, and that's a good record, but it is kind of conventional sounding. And then this is the one where they were like, okay, we didn't like that. We're still going to have a live band, but it's going to be this much more eclectic mm-hmm. approach. And this is like the first song where it was revealed that Linnell, who's the keyboardist, can really write these like guitar rockers.
He can rock, yeah.
And there's kind of like one of these per record now.
Yeah.
I just think this one's so good. And I think it's like such an unconventional topic for a song, which is like an old guy who is saying, I'm not going to be forced off the stage yet. Like, I still have stuff to say and I'm going to say it whether you want it or not. I think that lyric of... clearing my throat and gripping the lectern, I smile and face my audience, clearing his throat and smiling with his hands on the bathroom sink. And that kind of like reveal of like, yeah. Oh, he's looking in the bathroom mirror, sink,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's rehearsing his speech, which he's like forgotten. And he maybe ate like 40 Advil by accident. but I think it's like a really, I find it to be a really affecting song, even though I have never been an old guy who people hate. I think it's a very like beautiful mm-hmm. And sad song with this like crazy driving new wave sort of pulse. I think it's just like such a great song.
Yeah. It's another one where I'm baffled as to why it's not like used in. It's not more well known.
Sure.
This sounds like a classic song to me. You know.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't know, like when you hear like a good joke or something where it's like, how is that a new joke? Wow, that's so perfect. This is like the song version of that to me, where it's like, this sounds like I've been hearing it my whole life, but mm-hmm. It's just so perfect.
Yeah, and this is like a four chord rocker.
It's just,
that just is like but it's like mm-hmm. so cool.
Yeah, fun song.
I
also
love it.
That message, I mean. An old guy who people hate, who won't be stopped. It's like my man Donald T. You know?
our
beautiful American president.
Oh,
so I give that song 5 stars.
Yeah, one of those guys, we don't like the fans, but we like him.
Right. I'm not here to defend. Right.
But they are always wearing those goofy hats, though. You know?
Yeah.
That's perfect.
That's great. Guys, thanks so much
like
for coming on.
A lot of white guys.
Yeah.
Angry nerds.
You can't fuck to his speeches. What's with that?
You can to his behind the scenes footage, though. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but it's been nice to be here.
We got to give a rating for
a rating out of six
playlist.
Yeah. Really quick. I'm going to give my second highest rating ever. I'm going to give a 5. 5 out of 6.
Awesome.
The only one I didn't like was
the statue. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Behind,
I think ABBA got a perfect 6.
Fair
I'm
enough,
pretty sure.
Course.
Yeah.
You know, fair.
I feel like I might have given something else a perfect 6 too, but I can't remember. I'm going to go 4.75. But I really liked it. That's still a highest score for
that's
me.
That's pretty high.
I really enjoyed it. It really changed my opinion on the band. I think it's the first time I went from like kind of hating a band to like, I like a lot of it. This was not, none of these songs were what I thought that they were.
It's at least okay.
And I would love to drill down just a little. What did you think they were?
Yeah.
I really thought that they mostly made children's music. I thought that it was a lot. I didn't realize they even had this side to them, to be honest, which it seems like this is what most of their music was.
Sure.
I think Particle Man and Istanbul Constantinople really throw people off.
Istanbul.
Absolutely. And those are the Tiny Toons tracks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
Istanbul is the song that defined them to me, and I was like,
totally.
I get it. They're cute. They're like trying to be educational for some reason. Like I didn't really understand what the purpose it was, I guess.
Yeah.
So then I was shocked when I found out that people really liked them, and I just never, I somehow never got around to this stuff. Birdhouse in Your Soul and Don't Let Start, They're going in my rotation now. Oh, I'm putting those on the playlist.
That's good. I'm definitely going to check them out. Like, I'm going to listen to these albums, give them a shot.
Go for it.
So you guys did a great job.
Oh,
great job curating this playlist. Yeah. And also, thanks for bringing so much knowledge to it. This is the most information and like
that's
valuable
all Tisher.
Information.
That's all Tisher.
it's the fruits of being a drag about this band for 20 years.
Is there anything you guys want to plug?
Yeah, plug time.
Wait, when is this going up?
This will be this Wednesday.
Oh, well, tonight.
Yes, tonight. This Wednesday, August 9th.
Come to Baby Castles, which is 145 West 14th Street in Manhattan. Tish and I are hosting a show called Little Gross Guys, an evening of comedy about bats and rats, and that's all, where we curated a few of our very favorite performers in the city to come and make comedy about rats and or bats.
The rat, dolphin and dog.
You guys got to hear this song called Mammal by They Might Be Giants. You would be rolling on the floor laughing at that. But it's a follow-up to a show we did a couple months ago called Little Green Guys.
And that was an evening of comedy about frogs and lizards, and that's it.
And it famously, life finds a webbed feet.
Yeah.
That's the origin of one of those jokes that you think, no, this must have always existed. Now, how would anyone have discovered this? This is something this is like the concept of a triangle. It's right in the universe waiting to be found. It's not something anyone came up with. It was discovered.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, come out to that.
Check
at 8 o'clock
out
tonight.
Joe and Andrew are two of my favorite performers. Go see them everywhere.
These boys are the funniest. And follow them both on social media. Where can people follow you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm at 2TonBug on Twitter.
And I'm at Tisher.
Check them out. Macman.
We can start plugging the next version of our monthly Caroline show, Tom and Tommy.
Comedy Mommy.
Which will be September 27th.
At 9:30 p.m.
Yeah, so
promo
buy
code
your tickets
Mommy
now.
Yeah. For $10 tickets. Mm-hmm. We already have a couple comics booked that we're real psyched about. It's going to be a great time, and there's going to be elements of the podcast from it. Thanks, everybody, who came to the last one. You know who you are. I'll be at the Knitting Factory September 3rd. I'm going to be at the Sacramento Punchline and at, what else here? And at the Boise, Idaho 208 Comedy Festival, September 7th through 9th. So come to that. There's going to be a Douglas Movies there too. Macman, anything else you want to plug?
No, that's great.
All right.
Wait, real quick. It's so funny that the two people coming on to defend They Might Be Giants just plugged their comedy show about bats and rats. And that's all they did.
You know, I want to say quickly that I Joe, I remember I went to They Might Be Giants concert here in Brooklyn, and then shortly after, you tweeted something like the saddest story ever. What if a couple. called off a wedding because one wanted to have a first dance to a Linnell song and the other wanted a Flansburgh song. and I didn't really know you, and I thought, I gotta be friends with
and
this
now
guy.
And we are. Wow. Oh, my goodness. And we're going to go see them this weekend.
That's
we're
right.
going to go see them in Central Park.
Wow. That is beautiful. What a beginning.
Touching way to end this.
This band begun a friendship, so we stand by them.
Yeah.
Rate and review the pod. That helps us out a lot. And thanks again to our guests for coming on. You guys are the best.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Thanks to my co-host. Stand by your bands, guys.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Crispy.